Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jettikin.
And what do we have for this week?
We thought we would have a little easy breezy fun episode after our intense four-parter
saga.
Before our next intense multi-parter.
Yeah, Desi has a real heavy hitter episode for next week. So
we thought we would focus in on a little bit more, some more famous celebrity feuds.
Yeah.
Because we discussed Mariah and Eminem and Mariah and J-Lo on our last episode. And we had so much fun with that. We're like, let's take a peek at some other big celebrity feuds.
So what do we have, Desi?
Well, first up, we're going to talk with one of the biggest from the early 2000s, and that is the feud between Paris Hilton and our girl, Lindsay Lohan.
Mm.
You probably followed this feud closely, I'm guessing.
I sure did.
Well, this is mostly from an article in Elle by Deandra Malavindi. She really broke it down pretty well, but I did insert some other information I found in Business Insider, which for some reason is actually a celebrity.
Okay.
What is Business Insider?
Why do I have so many celebrity gossip sources from Business Insider all the time? Like when I've used Business Insider for several episodes.
I had like a subscription at some point.
Because I still do have a subscription.
I had to cancel it. Because I was like, oh shit, I've been paying for Business Insider all this time. I think I got it for the Dan
Schneider.
Yeah, the Dan Schneider. They had a huge expose at some point.
I got a subscription for the America's Next Top Model episode.
Oh my God.
And I think I only canceled it because of Rocket Money. Sponsor for the show, Rocket Ding. Money.
She just looked at the camera and winked. She's breaking the fourth wall. No, I agree. It was like an exact type of thing you would use that for. It was like, shit, I've been paying for this for 6 months. Like, God damn it. And then you're like, I better use it one more time to get my money's worth.
But like, honestly, I do use it a lot.
It's crazy though, because it's like, what is this? I would think it was business, like a Forbes or Bloomberg.
But they're gossiping.
No, I'm very curious about this publication at this point. Anyway, this though is mostly, like I said, from the Elle article. So in May of 2006, this is sort of where most people think this situation began officially. So at the time, Lohan became linked to Hilton's ex-boyfriend, Stavros Niarchos.
Yeah.
Do you remember this guy?
Of course, he's a Greek shipping heir.
He is a Greek shipping heir. And a few days after this coupling kind of got posted in the gossip rags, this is where the sort of inciting incident happened. Hilton is seen audibly laughing as her friend, Brandon Davis, another staple of this time period, is speaking about Lohan to the paparazzi. He says, I think she's worth about $7 million, which means she's really poor. It's disgusting.
I'm sorry.
Now, this is a time period where people were openly like, ew, you're poor.
Yeah.
Like, what was the shirt Paris wore about poor people?
It's actually Photoshopped.
Oh, is it?
It's Photoshopped. It's famous. I mean, people think it's real. It's the shirt says, stop being poor.
Okay, so that's Photoshopped?
That's actually Photoshopped. It said stop being desperate originally.
Okay.
But it just became so memeified that...
Probably because of this incident a little bit, right?
But I do agree with you, what you said. This was an era where I do feel like we were sort of in peak opulence, peak bragging about being rich, flashiness.
And if you didn't have those designer things, you were gross.
Yes.
Yeah. So he goes on to say that she lives in a motel, which I'm sure was probably like the chateau.
It was.
Like, yeah. It was just like, So he also, in this conversation or statement, this is where he makes the infamous comment that Lindsay Lohan has, he calls her fire crotch. Yeah. So this is considered, like, obviously he's talking about her body, and he says, who would want to fuck her? Now, all the time he's going on this rant, Paris is in the back, sort of like on her phone laughing. Now, she commonly was seen with her phone in hand, but it was sort of like a way to not have people talk to her. So people are like, oh, she's clearly laughing at what he's saying and using the phone as kind of like a prop to get away with it. I guess that was sort of the take. Now, obviously, this video footage went viral, and Paris's publicist, Elliot Mintz, had to go to TMZ with a statement.
Right, because it was so, like, mean. Even for the time, it was, like, outrageous.
Because it was like, why is he going off on her, too? Like, yeah. It seemed sort of out of nowhere.
Right.
So this statement said, it's unfair to characterize Brandon's statements as being reflective of Paris's feelings about Lindsay. We're dealing with two different people. It was Brandon who was speaking. Of course, there are moments when Paris is laughing, but she never said anything. So he also went on to say that she uses her cell phone as a defensive tool to avoid reporters' questions. And Davis also apologizes to, quote, his friend a week later. He says his behavior was inexcusable and that, quote, what started out as a joke got completely carried away. I am horrified at the words that came out of my mouth. Now, Brandon Davis is kind of like a scumbag, right? Like, At this time, he was kind of like real scummy.
He was like known for just being this like party guy. He was always in the tabloids. He was obviously very close friends with Paris. He was at all the hot nightclubs.
Well, he's also from a very rich family, kind of similar to Paris. Like, he has a lot of family money.
He does.
I can't remember what his family is, but they're like a big LA.
Big LA money. Yeah.
So in August of 2006, Lindsay finally speaks about this video for the first time in an interview with Elle magazine. She says that she's never seen the video and plans to never see it. How does she never see it?
It was everywhere.
Well, that's clearly a lie, right? People love saying they didn't see things, but it's like, if someone badmouthed me, I'd be like, let me see right now. There's no way I wouldn't want to see, right? Like,
yeah.
Because you know what they said. It's not like it's going to hurt you. But I would be like, let me see this fucker. Like,
yeah.
She also went to say about Hilton, obviously she's very comfortable making videos.
Oh.
So this is clearly a slam, because Paris at this point had a very famous sex tape leak, One Night in Paris. Is that what it was called?
Yes.
And it was with Rick Solomon?
Yes.
Okay. Those were wild days of celebrity sex tape leaks.
She's like, I mean, she was already getting famous. She was definitely like an up and comer. But when that leaked, it obviously put her into the stratosphere and made her a household name.
Yes. And that's definitely one of those sex tapes where people are like, was it on purpose?
It was definitely sort of. Like, I don't remember if people thought that Pam and Tommy had leaked theirs, which they obviously didn't. It was like a
no.
It was a crime what happened to them. But to me, this was sort of the first real discussion that everyone sort of was having discourse around. Did they or didn't they leak it?
Right. Like, sort of with, like, similar with the Kim and Ray Kardashian.
Yeah. Right.
You can see why it might happen a little more with these people, because they weren't really actors or musicians. And they kind of got famous for being famous.
Yes.
And Lindsay also claims in this interview that Brandon and Paris were prank calling her after the incident, and that Paris pulled her aside at a club after Lindsay and Stavros, like, had started dating. And she denied that they were in a love triangle, though, Lindsay. She's like, I would never fight with a girl over a guy. It's bad karma.
What about Aaron Carter?
That's what I'm going to say. I'm like, girl, you already famously did it. It's not a new thing. I mean, I don't give a shit, but, like, it's a funny thing to say.
Yeah. So they're saying this whole thing stemmed from the, because I do remember this was like, ooh, that used to be Paris's boyfriend.
Right. And I mean, all of these relationships were kind of like very quick and done.
And like everyone dated Stavros Niarchos.
No, there was like three guys that everyone dated.
Wilmer.
Harry Morgan.
Harry Morton.
Morton, yeah. The pink taco guy.
The pink taco guy. Everyone dated him and Stavros Niarchos.
Yeah. They were like the rich guys.
Yeah.
So in November of 2006, this is where Lindsay allegedly publicly called Paris a cunt while on camera. Now, she's asked to clarify what she said, and she immediately denies that that's what she said. She's like, I never said that. I love Paris. Paris is my friend. But 1 week later, she also claimed that Paris hit her in the arm with a drink at a party, and she told paparazzi, it hurts, and it's not okay. I'm sorry that everyone thinks I'm crazy, but I'm not. I'm just trying to act.
I just missed her so much.
Yeah. So this is a very famous incident because after all of this drama and after she says this to the paparazzi, the next day she's in a car with Paris and Britney Spears and they're like on a night out on the town. So they're like, oh, everyone's good again. Like that's sort of what the public is thinking.
The public was up in arms about this alleged incident in the club where Paris was said to have hit Lindsay Lohan.
Right.
Like this was a big scandal. People were like, oh my God, violence.
Yeah. At the club.
At the club.
At the club. Like one of those clubs that everyone was going to.
Yeah.
So she goes to the press and she's like, she's my friend. Everyone lies about everything. It's like, girl, you're the one who told everyone the day before, like what happened. Like who was lying? Like Paris goes on to explain that Lohan actually crashed her and Spears' plans that night. She gave an interview with Sirius XM Radio, and she said on that specific night, Lohan wasn't even supposed to be there. She said her and Spears were attending a party at a hotel, and then they were heading to an after party. According to Paris, quote, we were all at the Beverly Hills Hotel at the Bungalows, and we were at an after party, and then Brittany and I wanted to leave to go home. And then Lindsay started like chasing us and then squeezed into the car. It was literally a two-seater, and she just like squeezed in. Now, they kind of wanted her to leave, but paparazzi was literally chasing the car, and they didn't want to humiliate her. So they were like, they couldn't say get out. They just let her get in. And Paris said, so I was just like, whatever.
That's so mean. That's so mean.
And it's kind of funny because if you see there's obviously famous pictures of this night.
Yeah.
And Lindsay does look like she's squeezed in this back and her head's like in between the two front seats.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
And New York Post famously had the headline of this photo be Bimbo Summit.
Yes. Yes. So these were like, what were they called? Like the four bimbos of the apocalypse or something? Like they had some name like that. Like Paris, Lindsay, Brittany, and maybe like Nicole Richie. I can't remember.
Yeah.
There was like some tabloidy type thing. So the next year, Paris is sentenced to 45 days in jail for violating her probation. We all remember she only spent 5 days in jail. Do you remember that?
Dude, this was crazy.
This was like, people were like watching and waiting.
No, like, this was like the Bronco chase.
There was like helicopters.
I remember just the famous footage of her crying in the car arriving to jail.
The world stopped, like truly when this happened.
It really felt like that.
It was out of control. So at the end of that month, Lindsay enters rehab herself. And then at some point when Paris is out of jail, she does an interview with Larry King Live and she's asked about friends of hers who are also receiving help. And she's like, I have no friends in rehab. Lindsay, so everyone's like,
Lindsay said that?
No, Paris said that. So it was like, oh, so Lindsay was in rehab. So she's like, I don't have friends in rehab. It's very like Mariah Carey-esque.
Yeah.
And then surprisingly, they're seen again together at Lohan's 4th of July party. So this is 1 month before Lindsay goes into rehab again. So they had a little reunion and then she's back in rehab. In August of 2008, they both attend the grand opening of the Apple Lounge and they seem like they're friends again. But by January of 2009, Hilton does an interview with Glamour magazine and she explains that they do seem to have their rift resolved. She's like, I saw her a month ago and she was really sweet and seemed really happy. We're adults now. So the next year or so, they kind of seem like friendly, but they're not like besties. Now in 2011, Paris has a new reality TV show called The World According to Paris. And in one scene, there's a controversial moment. She's seen giving her earrings to a homeless woman, and the woman mistook Paris for Lindsay Lohan. And Paris says to her, if I was Lindsay, I'd be stealing the earrings, not giving them away.
Oh,
so
she was like famously at this time, like charged with stealing stuff.
Yes, she had recently been arrested for stealing a necklace.
At like Kitson,
yeah,
or one of those stores.
So of course, afterwards, Paris apologizes. She says, I apologize to Lindsay for the comment I made. I was joking around, but it was thoughtless and unnecessary. She told this to TMZ. She's like, I am reaching out to Lindsay so I can tell her myself. Lindsay accepts her apology, and then they are photographed again hanging out at Paris's house in July of that year. Now, the next incident happens in December of 2013 during Art Basel in Miami. Look, there's something about that Art Basel. It's just such a funny event to me that they all go to.
Yeah.
Every year.
It's so...
Like, I don't even 100% know exactly what it is.
There is a lot of, like, art there. Like, legitimate people who are legitimately into art.
Yes.
And, like, art dealers and gallerists. Like, they do go. It is a very big event. But it's also, much like Coachella, it's also about the parties.
Yeah, it became like a thing. So at this event, at one of like the parties, Paris's younger brother, Baron, gets attacked and he posts photos of his injuries online. He doesn't really explain what happened, but he says Lohan was partly responsible.
Oh my God.
His attacker is later identified as Ray LeMoyne. And Hilton comments on this post of his injuries. And she's like, they will both pay for what they did. No one fucks with my family and gets away with it.
Oh my God.
So as far as what happened, LeMoyne's representatives say that Hilton's brother was the first to get physical after refusing to leave his house. So it seems stupid and drunken. Paris's brother does file a police report, but the criminal investigation is dropped. And everyone basically, this is very rich. They just all kind of decide to drop out and no one cooperates anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like basically over. Now in 2017, Lohan is in Dubai at this point. She moved there, according to this, in 2014. But they cross paths again at the Amphar Gala at that year's Cannes Film Festival. So at this, they seem pretty amicable. Nothing major really happens one way or the other. But then in 2019... an Instagram account by the name of Paris 2000s shares a series of videos of Lindsay sort of backtracking on comments she's made about her former friend. So this is like a little montage some fan account puts together. And Paris sees the video and shares a comment of her own on this, calling Lindsay a pathological liar.
Oh my God. This was in 2019?
Yes. So she basically reignites this feud. When
she's
comments
like 40 at this point
on this video. So in one of the videos, Lindsay says something that Hilton hit me last night for no reason, apparently, with a drink. She talks about that incident. And in another video that's taken with a paparazzi, Hilton tells the Mean Girls actress to tell the truth. So this is, I think the next clip in that montage is Lindsay saying, Paris is my friend. Everyone lies about everything. She's a nice person. She never did that. She's a good girl. So she's kind of backtracking. And this is what she's like. She's a pathological liar. Then in a Watch What Happens Live appearance with Andy Cohen, this is in 2020. He asked her about this famous feud.
Paris? He asks
yes.
Paris.
And he says, tell me like three nice things about Lindsay Lohan. This is a game called Plead the Fifth. So she smiles and she's thinking and she starts off by saying she's beyond, to which Andy says, that's a pretty nice thing to say that she's beyond. But then Hilton finishes the sentence with beyond lame and embarrassing.
Oh my God.
And Cohen is like, all right, like, okay. Like, So shortly before her wedding, which I think is February 2022, TMZ asked Paris if Lindsay will be invited to her wedding. And she's like, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
How is this feud still going on?
It's crazy. She then adds that she doesn't have any drama with anyone and instead tries to not surround myself with certain people.
Ooh.
So January 2022. This is right around the same time. She does another Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. On this one, she says she's ready to lay their feud to rest, saying that they are grown up now.
I love that she said that like 15 years ago and she's reiterating it again.
Yeah, it's like, you're more than grown up now. You're like middle-aged because you're almost 40. I mean, that's middle age when you're in your 30s.
She's like 41 at this point.
That's crazy. It's like you've been grown up.
I don't know why this is so dragged out.
No. She goes on to say, I just got married. She just got engaged. We're not in high school. I think it's just very immature and now everything is all good. So she does try to, I guess, officially end the feud, saying that she's been the first to kind of reach out. She's like, I saw that she got engaged when I was on my honeymoon, so I just said congratulations, no bad blood. And Lindsay has not yet publicly responded to this, but that's sort of where we're at with this feud.
Pretty recent.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that it continued this long.
Well, like there was bad things being said too, like within the past few years.
Right. I mean, I'm shocked by that.
But Lindsay seems to not be saying anything, or at least I didn't find it.
Yeah. Well, Desi, I have a feud too to discuss with you.
Ooh.
And it is the feud between Vincent Gallo and Roger Ebert.
Ooh.
Do you know about this?
I do.
Well, Vincent Gallo's film, The Brown Bunny, premiered at Cannes in May of 2003.
Okay.
Do you remember the press storm freak out about this movie?
Yes. Because he's coming off of Buffalo 66, which is a good movie. Like,
yeah.
And he had some great press for that. So this is his like follow-up as a director, right?
This is his follow-up film. It's like 5 years later. People are like expecting big things from this art house director.
Right.
And the press around this film immediately starts buzzing that Chloe Sevigny gives him a blowjob in the movie, but like a real blowjob.
Real, yeah.
Like not simulated. So there's like scandal around that. So the film premieres at Cannes in May of 2003. And it was said to be met with heckles and boos at the press screening.
Not the 10-minute ovation.
Yeah,
normally.
We hear that about like every movie.
Yeah.
They're like, it got a 10-minute standing ovation. But like, I feel like most of them do.
Also, that's weird.
10 minutes?
That's so long.
Anyway, New York Times critic A.O. Scott was in attendance, and he said the screening was, quote, remarkable for the unrestrained hostility of the audience. He also said that every time Gallo's name appeared in the credits, the audience booed. Roger Ebert, who was also there, called the film, quote, the worst film in the history of the festival. I have not seen every film in the history of the festival, yet I feel my judgment will stand.
Wow.
He was confident. Ebert also told the press at the festival, allegedly he said this, that Chloe Sevigny cried during the screening.
Aww.
Like that was like, oh, and Roger Ebert also said this. This was a claim that both Gallo and Chloe's publicist denied.
Okay.
Variety interviewed Cannes chief Terry Frima. I'm sorry, that's French, in 2018. An excerpt from that article reads, he recalls during the press screening of Vincent Gallo's The Brown Bunny, the booing started during the opening credits, which stated that the film was written by, directed by, produced by, and starred Gallo. There was ironic applause halfway through the notoriously slow-moving film when Gallo got out of the van to remove his sweater, one of the few moments of action in the film.
Oh, my God.
I would have loved to witness this screening.
That's crazy.
Is everyone sarcastically clapping when, like he takes his sweater off?
What is going on?
A week after the festival, Gallo told the New York Observer that while there was booing, his film also got a 15-minute standing ovation, longer than Gus's.
Wow.
Referring to Gus Van Sant, of course. Vincent Gallo called Roger Ebert, quote, a fat pig with the physique of a slave trader.
What?
He then said that he put a hex on Roger Ebert's colon and that he hoped he got colon cancer.
Oh, my God.
Now, Roger Ebert, like, would soon after get cancer.
Right, but it was, like, the opposite end.
It was salivary cancer.
Oh, my God, though.
Some papers reported that Gallo had apologized for inflicting his film upon the public. But Gallo responded to those claims by saying, quote, I never apologized for anything in my life. I like the movie. I had 100% creative and financial control over it. And if I didn't like it, I would have changed it. The only thing I am sorry about is putting a curse on Roger Ebert's colon. If I'm sorry.
It just sounds funny to say.
If a fat pig like Roger Ebert doesn't like my movie, then I'm sorry for him.
Wow.
Roger Ebert fired back, writing in the Chicago Sun-Times, quote, I'm not too worried. I had a colonoscopy once, and they let me watch it on TV. It was more entertaining than the brown bunny.
Wow.
It is true that I am fat, but one day I shall be thin, and he will still be the director of the brown bunny.
Damn, he got ethered.
So Gallo then re-edited the brown bunny ahead of the Toronto Film Festival, shaving 25 minutes off the film. Roger Ebert wrote a new, rather favorable review of the film in 2004 to reflect a new cut, like this new cut of it.
Really?
Where he basically amended his statements.
Okay.
About the film, because this film was like, I've never seen the movie. You can't find it on streaming anywhere.
I've just seen the blowjob scene.
Oh, you have? I haven't even seen that.
Oh, really?
What's it like? Is it as graphic?
Yeah, it's very graphic where you're like, okay, she is definitely really blowing him.
Right.
Like, it is pretty obvious.
People were so scandalized by that.
Because it's really long, too. Like, this is a long scene.
It's like a in real time.
Yes.
Blowjob.
So it's kind of, it's disturbing because you know he's a piece of shit. I mean, like, especially now, because it was recent when I saw it, and he's just so awful. So it's hard to watch because I don't like him.
Yeah, like as a person.
As a person, yeah. So, yeah. But definitely I can see why it was scandalous because it's something you don't normally see.
And she's at this point obviously a very critically acclaimed actress.
Yeah.
But she would later go on to explain. I was reading an interview with her in like 2011 because obviously she like still gets asked about this from time to time.
Right.
But she's like, yeah, it was an art film.
And they were, like, dating, right?
They weren't dating.
They weren't?
But they were alleged to have been dating at the time.
At the time.
But he denied that.
Right.
And I think she did, too. But that was, like, the story that, oh, they're boyfriend and girlfriend, and they're making a movie together. And she's giving him a real blowjob in the movie.
I guess it's a way to justify, like, maybe be like, oh, well, they're really dating, so it's not too weird. Make it less weird, I guess. Maybe that's why people wanted to think that.
Or maybe paint them as both narcissists, like, oh, we all want to see them fuck.
Yeah. I mean, it's a kind of a believable couple at the time, right?
Totally.
Because like, they were both like, indie darlings.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, attractive at the time. Like,
oh, yeah. He was definitely attractive.
Yeah. It's a weird scene because I think also just seeing it because it is so famous. It was like, oh, this is the scene. Yeah.
I haven't even seen clips of like any of the rest of the movie beyond the trailer, but it is apparently like there's a scene in it where you just see like a windshield for 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
While he's driving.
I don't think I know much about the movie. I did see Buffalo 66. And liked it,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's good.
But like, yeah, I don't know much about Brown Bunny outside of that scene.
It's basically about a motorcycle racer played by Gallo who is traveling across the country by car And it's like, you just watch him drive across the country. And like, most of it is like
slice of life driving down the road,
but like very like nothing happening.
Right.
And like, he meets a couple girls along the way, but it's like a very sparse,
right,
at least from all the reviews of it.
I mean, that's probably why that blowjob scene stood out.
Well, everyone's waiting to get, they heard about it. I mean, if I was at Con, I'd be like, well, I got to see this movie. It has so much buzz around it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for sure.
So Gallo re-edits the film. 25 minutes of it are shaved off. So Roger Ebert sees this new cut and he's like, wow, that was actually pretty good.
Really?
It's kind of incredible how much his opinion changed. He wrote this in his updated review. The film's form and purpose now emerge from the miasma of the original cut and are quietly, sadly effective. It is said that editing is the soul of cinema. In this case of the Brown Bunny, it is its salvation.
Damn.
So he's like really driving how I read the whole review. He's really driving home like how important editing is to a film and how much it can make it or break it.
Right.
Which is true.
It's very true.
The following year, Gallo and Ebert buried the hatchet.
Oh.
Ebert wrote about his first time meeting Gallo at a screening of The Brown Bunny in August of 2004. Gallo told Ebert that he was misquoted when it was reported that he said he wished Roger Ebert get colon cancer. He said, I didn't say that. I said, I wished you got prostate cancer.
Sorry.
This is the meeting where they're burying the hatchet.
Oh my God.
Then Gallo confessed that he himself had prostatitis. He's like, I've been getting prostate massages.
Okay.
He's telling Roger Ebert this at this screening.
He's like, that's why I thought of it.
That's what he said.
Oh, he did?
He said prostate. He said, I know I didn't say colon cancer. I know I said prostate. I've been getting a lot of prostate massages lately. That's why I thought of it.
Yeah, it was on my mind.
Prostates are on my mind. The article continues on like a very lighthearted note. It's basically Roger Ebert just being like, this weird guy. We just had some chuckles about how mean we were to each other.
I mean, Roger's just, he's a film critic. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is what he does.
Do you think that he was trying to get the curse removed?
Maybe he was trying to get the curse removed.
Because I find if the movie is truly like what you said, just these long meandering shots, it's like, what's shaving 20 minutes going to do?
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I don't know because I've never seen either version of it.
Although there are a lot of like art house films, like from, you know, like a French, there's a famous French art house film that I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's like 3+ hours. And it's basically a woman just living her life, like a mom.
Right.
And she's just like in her kitchen. And it's like considered like the greatest film of all time by some film people. And so in that film, I remember I almost went to see it a few weeks ago and I was like, oh, I'm not in the mood to watch 4 hours of this. Like, I'm just not there.
Yeah,
do you know
what
I mean? It's like, but so it's like maybe there are people I think who do like those kind of things.
Yeah.
Like the cinematography. Not for me. But
yeah. And of course, film critics and people who are into cinema,
they're going to be like, oh, that's an homage to da da da. Like, they're going to find Easter eggs and like whatever.
Yeah. And there's like obviously like a lot of art house films that I really love. And then there's art house films I've seen where I'm like, that's just not for me.
Yes.
And I'm not too proud to admit that, that I'm like, oh, that was like too even, that was boring for me.
Yes.
But I can appreciate whatever, the cinematography, the acting.
No, I mean, that was a wild feud. I do remember it, but hearing the quotes again are shocking because they were, Gallo was so mean.
He was so mean.
And Ebert had every right to give his retort, I think. And he like, you know, he did a great job.
Well, Gallo wasn't done.
Oh.
Because in 2018, this is 5 years after Ebert had died.
Gee, these people hold these feuds for a long time.
He went off on Ebert again in an essay he wrote for Another Man. He says, quote, Roger Ebert claimed that the re-editing of The Brown Bunny after Con allowed him a difference of opinion so vast that at first he called it the worst film in history and eventually gave it a thumbs up. This is both far-fetched and an outright lie. The truth is, unlike the many claims that the unfinished film that showed at Cannes was 24 minutes shorter than the finished film, it was only 8 minutes shorter. Roger Ebert made up his story and his premise because after calling my film literally the worst film ever made, he eventually realized it was not in his best interest to be stuck with that mantra. Stuck with a brutal, dismissive review of a film that other, more serious critics eventually felt differently about. He also took attention away from what he actually did at the press screening. It is outrageous that a single critic disrupted a press screening for a film chosen in main competition at such a high-profile festival, and even more outrageous that Ebert was ever allowed into another screening at Cannes. His ranting, moaning, and eventual loud singing happened within the first 20 minutes. Now, Ebert did sing Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head out loud in the theater.
So he's acting up.
Allegedly. Like, Roger Ebert was allegedly making a big scene. They're like, oh my
so bored.
God. Yeah. I mean, so was a lot of the critics, apparently, were like very vocal during this.
And that's very, what you said.
Very yeah. disrespectful and sort of just like openly hostile, as that other critic said.
I feel like this festival in particular seems to have a lot of reactions during screenings.
Yes. Or you like, hear like... people marched out of this yes. screening because it was so graphic or so upsetting.
Yeah, wasn't there something with like a Lars von Trier movie that people like walked out of?
It's always a Lars von yeah. Trier movie.
Yeah. I mean, who can blame them?
I went down a Lars von Trier rabbit hole last night just because I was reading about Cannes and I was like, oh, I know he had like a very scandalous thing happen at the 2011 Cannes, and I was just like reading about that and like remembering all that shit. But I yeah. feel like there's always like every year there's always like one fucking scandal or one like weird thing that happens.
Absolutely.
So Gallo continues, his ranting and moaning and eventual loud singing happened within the first 20 minutes, completely disrupting and manipulating the press screening of my film. Afterward, at the first public screening, booing, laughing, and hissing started during the opening credits, even before the first scene of the film. The public, who had heard and read the rumors about the Ebert incident and about me personally, heckled from frame one and never stopped. To make things weirder, I got a record-setting standing ovation from the supporters of the film who were trying to show up the distractors who had been disrupting the film.
Oh.
Now, Gallo would say more around at the time of this, like in 2003, he was like, it was the worst feeling of my life. I mean, I can imagine that's gotta not feel good. You show your film that you worked so hard on and everyone's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
But I mean, now I want to go to Cannes just to go to see what some of these allegedly rowdy press screenings are like.
I want to go too. I want to cause an incident.
You want to cause an incident?
I like incidents at Cannes.
Yeah, because it's so fancy.
I feel like there's been other things too, like red carpet things. I feel like we discussed something, like some kind of fight.
A fight on the red carpet?
Yeah, like in one of our episodes. I feel like something happened.
Should we do a Cannes episode? Is there enough?
Bet you there's a lot of incidents there, like that happened. I feel like there's even been like affairs that were busted there, or like people showed up for the first time publicly. Like I'm just having some like vague memories.
It all happens.
That there's
Cannes.
Some things, there's always something happening. So yeah, I think it would be a good episode probably.
Cool.
And there's probably like scandals too about voting and like all that
right,
too.
Or like favoritism.
Yes.
Or like bribery. What if there was a bribery incident at Cannes?
Yeah, I bet you there was. There are accusations at least.
Accusations, yeah. I mean. Not saying that anyone would do that. But
no.
Just,
it's not the Golden Globes.
Ooh. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm the queen of starting a free trial offer and forgetting to cancel it, oftentimes being charged for months for something I'm not even using. If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes, but let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. With Rocket Money, I can see all of my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, I can cancel it with a tap. I never have to get on the phone with customer service. They'll even try to get you a refund for the last couple of months of wasted money and negotiate to lower your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is take a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. It's definitely saved me money, and now I can use that money to waste on things I do want. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. That's rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I have had a really stressful year with work and family stuff, and I know I'm not alone when I say I tend to push that stress down in order to get what I need done, and that only makes things worse. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. In the past, therapy has helped me navigate many situations, from helping me to set boundaries to just becoming the best version of myself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I love that it's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/HCS today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/HCS.
Desi, what's the final feud we're going to talk about today?
So the final feud we're going to talk about is between Naomi Campbell and one of our favorite topics, Tyra Banks. Mm. So let's go back to the early 90s, I guess. By this point, Naomi Campbell is obviously already a huge supermodel. She's part of that trinity with Linda Evangelista and Christy Turlington. Obviously, other supermodels join the group, but those are kind of the original three. And honestly, my favorite.
They're so good.
They're so good, and they're all sort of a different thing.
Yeah.
Right? They're such distinct looks. So Tyra comes along. Her first runway walk is in 1991. She's obviously just to get an idea of this time period, it's pretty rare that you would have more than one black model walking in a big runway show.
Yes.
So this is the time we're dealing with. Naomi Campbell is kind of like that girl for a while.
Right.
Not to say there aren't more black models. There are, but it's like a gross kind of thing where we have one.
No, it was like there was for so long, there was only ever allowed to be one big black model. Before Naomi, you had Beverly Johnson.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was just so rare.
Yeah. And if you had one in your show, one black supermodel, it was like, okay, we're good.
Right.
We've met our diversity goals. Like, right. It was that kind of thing. So as I said, Tyra comes along in 1991, she makes her debut at Paris Fashion Week, and it's definitely something people start to notice because she has like a similar walk, right? People comment on her walk. They both have these kind of iconic runway walks. And Naomi apparently also starts to notice this. And she's not happy.
She thinks Tyra's biting her style.
And the truth of the matter is, because of what we just mentioned, you know, she could feel threatened. Is she going to take a show and I'm not going to be on it too? Because they're only going to have one of us.
Like, right.
It is a legit fear that these women can have because of the circumstances they're in.
Right.
It's already hard enough to be a model, obviously, and that level, there's like so much competition and you want to get these big shows. But anyway, so Tyra kind of makes this splash. And in 1992, other black supermodels join Tyra and Naomi. They have this press conference in New York. They're called the Black Girls Coalition. And they're a group that's helmed by Iman and Beth Ann Hardison. And they're kind of like coming together to protest the fact that certain designers didn't book them for shows and that there is this one kind of per show rule or seeming rule that happens. So Tyra and Naomi are part of this group too. And so nothing is sort of on the front lines as far as their feuds go. They appear together in a photo shoot for Vogue in May of 1992. But there are starting to be rumblings that Naomi is not thrilled about Tyra being quickly nicknamed the next Naomi. Mm. And that can't feel good, especially when you're probably like, what, 24? Right. Like, you're already kind of being replaced by someone who's like 3 years younger.
Yeah.
So that same year, Naomi allegedly tells Karl Lagerfeld that he has to ban her from Chanel catwalks. If she appears, I don't, she tells him reportedly. She also apparently pushes Tyra out of Elite Model Management. John Casablancas, who is the founder of Elite, actually says that she made me lose Tyra Banks because she didn't feel like there was enough room for her and Tyra at the same agency. And so Tyra goes to IMG Models, which obviously we know because that becomes the American Next Top Models agency for at least part of the seasons, right?
Yeah.
So one of the, they do continue to do shows, and probably the biggest incident though is something that happens at a Gianni Versace show. Like Tyra's literally getting ready for this runway show. And then last second, Gianni cuts her from the, show and she's like obviously in tears. And the rumors are that Naomi had her kicked out of the show because she didn't want to walk the runway with her.
Oh my God.
So apparently this is like not uncommon for models to get cut last minute like this. It's kind of crazy because you'd think that would be a bigger deal because they could probably be doing another show or...
Yeah, that's money they're losing.
It's also mean.
It's mean.
Because you're like getting them excited or getting them all to that point.
Yeah.
And that's basically the take that Naomi says. She's like, that happens all the time. Like,
it's
I had nothing
Tyra.
To do with it. But some people did overhear her saying, I'm not walking the runway with her. Other models and other, you know, whatever, behind the scenes type people do think that she is the one. Now, Tyra tells this story a lot. I don't think she mentions Naomi, but she talks about an incident where she's modeling, and I think this was in Milan, and she calls her mom at some point saying she just wants to give up. Mm. This is like one of her moments. She definitely has mentioned it on Top Model.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just like this like breaking point where she decides she's going to like make it work and whatever. Like it's her like come to Jesus moment or something. And basically what happens, though, is we all know anything about Tyra's career. She kind of like leaves the world of high fashion to some extent and becomes more she gets a cover girl contract, which is considered a more commercial type deal than high fashion. She is the first black woman to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She gets into the Victoria's Secret modeling, and her and Naomi do make appearances together because Naomi does Victoria's Secret too at some point, and they walk the runway together, etc. So this feud has always been sort of talked about, and Tyra has Naomi on her talk show,
right?
So and this is a huge interview does.
So this is in the early 2000s or the mid 2000s. When is this?
Yeah, it's in the early 2000s. At this point, she's already doing Top Model.
Right.
She has her own daytime talk show. And this is like her big very special episode.
Yeah.
She has Naomi on the show. There's a lot of clips. When I was looking up some things for this, I saw like a ton of tweets where it was like, remember this moment? And she does talk about the incident with Johnny Versace, the Johnny Versace show. Naomi obviously denies it. And during it, she throws a pretty great subtle shade. And she's like, if you knew Johnny Versace, you would know he always does this.
Oh.
Insinuating that Tyra, she wouldn't know because she's not friends with Johnny. Like, that's something he always did.
Right.
And they basically seem like they kind of make amends. But Naomi is definitely on her best behavior at this point, because by that time, she had already been accused of some pretty heinous acts, including basically assaulting her assistant.
The cell phone incident.
The cell phone incident was really big. So I definitely think she's kind of like PR, on a PR sort of like, let's make things right and let's make sure everyone knows you're not a huge bitch. But Naomi, she kind of is a bitch. And she says she wants to be known as that. So what I'm saying is not me calling her a bitch. That's what she like welcomes it at this point.
Yeah.
Now, this, much like the other feuds that we've talked about, this goes on. And recently, 2020, this feud gets back up again because Naomi, on her Instagram, this happens in November of 2020, shares a post about Tyra Banks on Instagram stories. This gets 9.8 million, like whatever, hits or views. And she's basically sharing an article that she uploaded from something called The Things that's titled, "Here's Why Fans Are Starting to Think Tyra Banks is the Real Mean Girl, Not Naomi." So she shares.
Because you know what? Because you know what, Desi? This is in pandemic era and people are rewatching America's Next Top Model.
That's exactly right. So she obviously deletes the post. Kind of, you know, they always do that. They'll kind of immediately delete it. But everyone's obviously like, you know, there's tweets that are like, LMAO Naomi really posted this. I am gagging. Like, people are losing it because no one has thought about this feud forever. As you've mentioned, Tyra is now the one facing backlash for her talk show and for America's Next Top Model. So everyone's ready to drag Tyra for sure.
They're in that mode.
Especially like the Zoomer set who are discovering these clips for the first time. It's like, we lived through it.
God.
We know.
I can't even imagine being Gen Z and seeing the type of horrendous reality television for the first time that was on the air and just being like, what the fuck?
No, they're always like, I am like, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that episode where everyone changes race.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Like, it's just like, that happened. That was a challenge.
Yeah.
And then they were all animals. And like some of the bigger girls were elephants. Like, I remember. Oh my God. I mean, it was just like, there was so many things.
There's a reason we did like a 3-part fucking episode about America's Next Top Model.
Exactly. So it's like, they're sharing this stuff and like, I'm like, yeah, like, you ain't wrong. Like, it was bad.
We were in the trenches with that.
Yeah. So some of the other things that people are saying is like, I will always have an appreciation for Tyra, but I was always Team Naomi. They both mean so. Who cares? LOL. I'll give Naomi credit though, because she's mean with her full chest while Tyra throws rocks and hides her hands.
Oh.
That is true. Tyra does try to be the good girl, right? And Naomi is a little bit more open about her bitchiness.
It's just so funny because I remember being a kid and Tyra and Naomi were two of my favorite models. And I had no idea they were like, had this long time feud going.
Well, and I always remember too, because there's obviously the iconic George Michael Freedom 90 video.
Yes.
And then Tyra is in his big follow up video.
Right.
And it was definitely kind of like, oh, because I think that might be where I first saw her, is in that video. And
what
I was
about like, Black or White?
She was so much more like in the
right. She was prominent.
She was more
featured.
Prominent in the George Michael video for me. I do know from the Black and White video but there was other people in that video too, right? Like
yes.
I mean, there was just so many faces happening.
Yeah,
but I just remember the George Michael video where I was like, oh, who's that? Like,
because
she's so stunning and she's wearing like that Marabou green kind of outfit, which obviously is very appealing to me. I loved the outfit. I loved the look.
She was such a huge up-and-comer. I mean, she was just everywhere. Like she was so stunning.
She was so beautiful. So yeah, I mean, it's just funny. I was trying to find this quote from Naomi. I did want to see, I did look and find the article that Naomi shared about Tyra Banks. And it is pretty funny. First of all, I love the faces that they picked for the pictures. They're both looking kind of like, And basically, this is a list about Tyra Banks and her problematic shows and behavior.
It's all shit that we've talked about
as far as her being mean to like Danielle about her gap, her tooth gap.
Right.
Her being mean to people just about their personal lives and what they had to deal with.
Making someone get in a Greek salad.
Make people... Ironically, so weirdly enough, that's not one of the biggest problematic things that she's done.
Can I tell you something?
Of course.
Earlier this week, I made a Greek salad, and literally the first thing I thought of was, this kind of looks like the Greek salad from America's Next Top Model.
I think of that Greek salad all the time.
I know.
Like,
I know.
Like, just like I saw someone share it 2 weeks ago, like on, I saw someone sharing it. You know, it's like, it's definitely one of those things people discover all the time. And I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. And it's like, that's not even the worst of it.
No.
Because that's like season 18 crazy. She was running out of things. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So it's not like problematic. It's just fucking weird.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But Naomi, I was trying to find a quote, and Naomi did say something along the lines of like, yes, I am a bitch, but I'm a loyal bitch. Like she was owning it in that regard. So I know there's some other things coming out with Naomi now that I don't know all the details about with her, but she's definitely an interesting person and she's got quite a life for sure. But yeah, I definitely think it's funny that both of them kind of now, like now everyone knows Tyra is not the innocent in this either.
Yeah.
Like she's got some issues too, but she definitely, I think, did take this, I think the feud with her, with Naomi, actually probably pushed her in a career that ended up being more successful than she would have had if she was just a model, like a fashion, high fashion, you know, kind of model. Because she went more mainstream.
She went very mainstream and very commercial. It is sad, though. The origin of the feud is just like so sad.
It's sad because that industry is notoriously cutthroat, period.
And then to add all of the racism and like the body stuff on top of it.
Right. These girls are already at each other's throats and like living unhealthy lifestyles because that's how they have to do it to succeed. Right.
And, like being a model during fashion week is so stressful and like you're not getting any sleep. You're going from show to show.
Yeah.
And you're under so much pressure.
And you know, you're trying to like stand out.
Yeah.
Because it's like there are so many runway girls, we don't know their names.
Right.
And you want to be the one who can make it and get more print work and like whatever.
Right. To be a top model.
Yeah. And that's like,
you want to be on top.
You want to be on top. That's why people like Ms. J are so important, because you got to get that runway walk where your people are noticing you, but you don't look too stupid.
Right.
Like you're trying too hard.
Right. So you can be an icon.
Oh, and on the, I didn't get a chance to watch this clip, but apparently the highlight of this interview she does on the Tyra Banks show is they both imitate each other's walks.
Oh my God.
So I'm definitely going to have to find that later.
We'll find it.
Because that will be probably very funny to see. And it's probably low key mean, right?
Look,
but I would love to even be able to imitate Naomi's walk. Like,
I mean,
come
she's
on.
Like, it's fucking Naomi Campbell. It's like, regardless of her fucking personality, like
she's gorgeous.
Like in the 90s, like she had a fucking chokehold on me.
Oh my God.
I mean, I was like obsessed with her as a kid.
I was definitely into those supermodel, era of supermodel.
Honestly, it was that era. It was the original era, but then it was also the mid 90s era too. Like I was obsessed with Alec Weck and Shalom Harlow, who came like a little after.
I liked Shalom, and I was also super into the Guess Jeans girls, like Claudia Schiffer,
Letitia,
and, yeah,
or what's her?
Who was the Marilyn girl? Not Anna Nicole. There was another sort of Marilyn-esque girl. I can't remember her name right now. But I also love Shalom and Amber Valletta.
Oh yeah,
like those girls came out. I even liked Stella Tennant. Like, she's there was great. Just so many little niches.
We used to have models.
No, I whenever people talk about now, I'm like, it's just not the same. You'll never have that 90s supermodel stuff. Because
it just was a different time. The one thing I will say that I do think is cool, I mean, obviously we have a lot more body diversity and skin tones on the runway, which is like great. We need that. The one thing I will say that is also cool is we have a lot of age different. Like, we have a lot of older
Absolutely.
People. There's a lot of older models now.
The diversity factor around the, you know, every category of it is great.
I just don't think we have celebrity models the way we used to.
Not at that level.
The only celebrity models that we really have today are the Hadids and Kendall Jenner that are doing runway.
Right. And it's just, it's not the same for me.
It's not
the
same.
These were kind of people from famous families or from TV.
Right. So they were already famous.
I like these models that were like purely like, we discovered her at a German disco.
Yes. Like, yes.
I like that. Or like, we saw Naomi walking home from school.
Right. Like, right.
That was just a different era. So
it was different. Anyway, this will be an ongoing series. Not immediate. I mean, we're going to do something different next week, but.
Yeah.
In the future, stay tuned for the Gallagher brother saga, because that's coming.
God. Yeah, we have more. So
we have plenty more feuds to talk about.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.